This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Moderating inflation, that was the talk in the market trade on Wednesday as we saw the release of the consumer price index. We also saw grains and oil seeds mostly higher, with livestock higher for the most part on the day as well on Wednesday's trade. Welcome into Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us, making us part of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America. Great to be here with you once again as we look at what was happening in the market trade here on Wednesday. Again, inflation, that was the topic of discussion on the day, the release of the July Consumer Price Index, with the July Producer Price Index scheduled to be out on Thursday. But that CPI, the headline number, flat month on month in July, which is a dramatic change from the 1.3% gains seen in June. Now, analysts expected 0.2% gains. The CPI rose 8.5% year on year in July, down from 9.1% in June and below analyst expectations of 8.7%. The markets, commodities, energies, for the most part, we also saw the stock market rallying and reacting positively to a moderation here in the inflation numbers. The core CPI, that excludes the more volatile food and energy sectors, rose 0.3% month on month in July, down from 0.7% in June and down from analyst expectations of 0.5%. The core CPI rose 5.9% year on year in July, matching the June pace but down from analyst expectations of 6.1%. Looking as well at food inflation, that was up 1.1% month on month in July, while up 10.9% year on year. This was the seventh consecutive month that saw food prices rise 0.9% or more on a monthly basis. Food for consumption at home was up 1.3% month on month and up 13.1% year on year. Food for consumption away from home, that was up 0.7% month on month and up 7.6% year on year. Energy prices were down 4.6% month-on-month in July, while gasoline was down 7.7%, fuel oil down 11%, natural gas down 3.6% with electricity, that was up 1.6% month-on-month. Overall, energy prices are still up 32.9% year-on-year, gasoline up 44%, fuel oil up 75.6%, natural gas up 30.5%, and electricity up 15.2% year-on-year. Now, overall, today's report, though, the CPI was a good one, relatively speaking, showing the anticipated moderation in inflation numbers, largely due to the big drop in commodity prices seen in July. And this could heighten the talk of peak inflation. We hope it's true, but it's something we're still going to have to watch very closely as we move forward. Now, of course, commodity prices continuing their ebb and flow here. Soybeans have been seeing fund money come back into the market here this week, with decent strength in beans and in bean meal especially as well. August soybeans, that expiring spot contract has gapped higher a couple times this week. We've been up over $3 higher at times, and it's really just a sign of tight supplies and solid demand, with that contract breaking through the $17 mark once again and kind of hovering around that point. September beans up over $15, and new crop November being pulled higher as well a little bit. But again, a lot of that strength there in the old crop, the spot contracts, with that tight supply and solid demand across the countryside. The soy complex on Wednesday also got support from another soybean sale announcement on the Daily Wire. New crop soybeans to China from the U.S., 7.2 million bushels. So all that combined really giving some strength to the bean market again on Wednesday's action. Although we did moderate again some off of our numbers, off our session highs, I should say. Overall, though, these markets pricing in some of the weather risk that is still out there with the declining yield expectations for corn, beans, and spring wheat in many areas, seeing some of that fund money come back in because of that. Just a lot of things to consider here in this market trade right now as we look at weather, maybe seeing a bit of moderation in the forecast ahead here as we get into the back half of August. We're going to be keeping our eyes on that closely. Also keeping our eyes on everything going on with geopolitics and this Friday's WASDE report for the month of August. Will we see any major changes from USDA on any numbers? Maybe some of the global numbers could change with all the heat in Europe and Russia's wheat crop potentially getting bigger. There's a lot of unknowns, I think, going into that report on Friday, so that's something to keep in mind as well. We're going to talk about all that coming up here today on the program. Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, set to join us here in segment 2 and 3 to discuss what's going on in the market trade here today as we head closer to that report on Friday. Also, we're going to talk to Kossuth County, Iowa farmer Derek Schuchter at the end of the show today. Continue our crop tour across the Corn Belt. He's in one of the areas that's a very high-producing corn and soybean area in the Corn Belt, in the Western Corn Belt there in North Central Iowa, and they caught some of those timely rains here over the weekend. We're going to talk to Derek about that coming up at the end of the show today. Now, speaking of last weekend, seeing those rains in parts of farm country, John Baranek, ag meteorologist for DTN, says, while the rain benefited the parts of rural America stuck in a drought, other areas didn't need a lot of rainfall.
Yeah, so it wasn't just here in southern Minnesota. We also saw that it was actually even heavier south of the border in Iowa, a lot more 4 to 6 inch amounts there. Very helpful for some areas, but not a lot of those areas needed it. It also extended all the way down through southern Wisconsin and into northern Illinois. A lot of those crops, again, didn't really need it, but it's definitely helpful wherever it hit. And that front has really started to come through the eastern half of the Corn Belt. Again, a lot of these areas are doing much better than we are out here in the west. But Illinois, Indiana, Ohio are all seeing bouts of rain. They've had some flooding in some of these areas, but the rainfall that's gone through is mostly favorable. It's just those western states that just haven't.
The Dakotas saw mixed results from the weekend rains, according to Baranek.
South Dakota got some pretty good rainfall. The eastern half of it did, but the western half didn't really. North Dakota's kind of been missing out on a bunch of rain lately, although their soil moisture for the most part and crop conditions are still pretty good.
And he says the plain states are still struggling with drought.
That's the states of Nebraska, Kansas, kind of northern Missouri that have really missed out on a lot of the rainfall, even with these fronts coming through, and they've been a lot hotter. Temperatures have been up near or eclipsing 100 degrees very consistently all summer long, so the heat's been putting on a whole lot of stress for those areas.
And there may finally be some cooler air heading into the plains this next week and may bring at least a little rain with that front as well.
We're seeing kind of late next week, mid to late next week, we're seeing a push of cooler air move through, and it's going to come with a bit of showers too, so it's not a whole lot of rainfall, probably on the order for most people of a half inch or less, but the temperatures are going to cool back down. Instead of seeing highs in the 90s and up near 100, it's more like 70s and 80s for several days. So it's actually going to be below normal temperatures for a bit. That kind of occurs late next week into the following week, so it'll be a nice relieving break for them.
Once again, that is DTN ag meteorologist John Baranek with comments on the weather situation. Of course, weather is going to be top of mind here in these markets as we move forward the next couple of weeks. We're going to be watching things closely, watching those weekly crop progress reports and all the different crop tours that are coming up, yield estimates, etc. They're going to be watched closely by the market trade and traders. Well, coming up, we are going to take a dive into Wednesday's market action with Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics. He joins us on the way after the break. Back with more market talk right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to discuss the market trade and what we saw on the day Wednesday, we welcome in our good friend Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics joining us here on Market Talk today. Mike, great to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
Great to be back with you, Jesse. I'm doing great. We're still a little dry here in this part of northeastern Kansas, but we cannot complain given what the poor people and ranchers and farmers south and west of us are contending with at this point. So we're still hanging in there with, I think, above average crop yields at this stage, but a couple weeks from now, if we don't have any rain, I might have to lower that down some.
Well, that's something we're going to keep our eye on. I know we'll talk more about that coming up. I want to start, though, soybeans. What happened on Wednesday in the soybean trade, Mike? We were seeing great strength, and then we kind of just faded. What happened?
I think that the big thing to realize about the soybeans is that they've had about a $3 run from low to high up until today's high. And I think that the trade understands that a lot of the reason why they're rallying and why they've been able to diverge from corn and wheat until the last maybe 24 or 36 hours when the weather and the dollars come into play in a favorable way for the wheat and the corn. But the reason the beans have been able to move so aggressive with the meal has been the fact that we've got this currency relationship developing where the Brazilian currency in 2 weeks of time has eroded about 8 weeks of losses. In other words, this is the second week of a stronger week for the Brazilian real against the U.S. dollar, and it's at an eight-week high as of today. This is a weekly chart of the U.S. dollar versus the Brazilian real. Remember, in these kind of charts, when you have the U.S. dollar on top, when the chart is showing higher prices, that means the dollar's gaining on the real. So the fact this market is in a third lower week and eating into the eight prior weeks of price action says and shows you the real is strengthening. And notice where that tick is at about 5.08 reals to the U.S. dollar. That's about a percentage point off the highs. And so I think a big element to the soybean rally, Jesse, and why we've gained this $3 in price so quickly has been this chart right here. And I'm sure there's some other fundamentals out there too, but I think the funds and the ability of the currency funds really has to be considered. If you're not familiar with it, I think it's a good time to get in touch with somebody like me that really follows this, because this is just as important as the yield that comes out by USDA on Friday when it comes to the price trend for soybeans.
Well, I want to flip charts on the video screen and stay on the soybean track, talk the world soybean price. What are you seeing with this chart, Mike? And talk to me a little bit more about your thoughts heading into Friday with this soybean market, especially after the way the trade acted on Wednesday.
So the neatest thing about this chart is the prior chart. Remember what I just said, that we've just had a $3 rally in U.S. soybeans. So the purple line on this is our Gulf of Mexico bean price. Even with a $3 rally roughly in soybeans and lead month futures, the cash price for beans in the United States is still at about $20, $25 cheaper than the Brazilian Paranagua export price. That's your currency showing up right there, Jesse. You're at a $631 Gulf of Mexico price against a $656 per ton price in Brazil. And I think this is why we saw China come in and buy some soybeans from the United States on Wednesday morning. And this is really the heart and soul of why the funds care about the currency so much and care about the Brazilian currency so much, because let's face it, when it comes to China especially, they're trying to buy as much South American product and as little U.S. product as possible, but they aren't going to continue to do that if the U.S. dollar keeps sinking to the Brazilian currency. So this is where the rubber hits the road as far as, well, you talk about currencies, what's it really mean to me in the production side of things and in U.S. exports? And that's what it really means, is $3 rally in U.S. futures still keeps you $25 a ton cheaper than the Brazilian price. As far as the report goes, I think there's two big things to watch. The first thing is, going back to the June 30th data, USDA NAS has said that they may reintegrate new acreage data into this August 12th report, because we still had 4 million acres of corn and over almost 16 million acres of beans unplanted as of the time of the acreage survey. I talked to the head of NAS last week, Lance Honig, and I asked him, where do we stand with this? And he essentially said to me, if we get the numbers from FSA and they're certified, they will go into the August 12th report. So we could look forward to potentially a big increase in U.S. soybean acreage base. I was at 90 million acres back in the springtime. I still think 90 million acres is still fairly correct and accurate, and that's the number I'm going to keep on the numbers on the spreadsheet for me until I see Friday's numbers. The second thing to watch is the spread. Notice the old crop, new crop spread. Which price is right? Is it the August price that's getting ready to go off the board, or is it the September and November price, which is correct? Sometimes when we go into an August report with this type of a premium in the old crop, it's just a sheer show of how tight our old crop supplies are. I want to see if the 2021 ending stocks are clipped very dramatically or not. And that's going to factor into a lot of whether I pull a lot of hedge triggers for 22 crop and 23 crop or not.
That's a great point you make with the soybean, with the old crop and new crop spread, et cetera. Looking at the corn market, Mike, let's shift gears over there. Corn held up rather firmly on Wednesday, despite the pullback in beans late. You look at corn, though, we look at the weather issues, of course, the Western Plains. We look at a good crop in the east on corn. What's your thoughts heading into Friday's report in this corn market? And just it feels like we've maybe had a little bit of sideways action, price action here the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been held back by the wheat. There's just no really around that. And part of that is the currency. Part of that is the Ukrainian situation and trying to figure out how many ships are going to get on the water each week. But I think, Jesse, we're coming back to a more of a July report feel when it comes to corn, where we could see the corn diverge from the rest of the group because we are in the mix of a very dramatic hot, dry period that I think after traveling from Atchison to Detroit on Thursday and back from Detroit, Michigan to Atchison on Sunday, we are losing a vast majority of the central Corn Belt crop right here, right now. I was shocked by the amount of corn that still had yellow tassels, bright yellow tassels, and no silks that were brown, I would say around a third of it. And so I'm really concerned about tip back again this year, like I was last year after this road trip. In fact, this picture you're showing is one of two corn pictures around that where the drought monitor shows up the most in the crop. And this area along US 231 that I snapped this picture was south of Lafayette, Indiana, and it was on some gravelly ground. It was not the best ground in Tippecanoe County, Indiana, but it's good ground. It's flat ground, and you can see how it's been stressed and how it's getting clipped at this point. And right after I sent this picture to clients, I had a client near Linden, Indiana, which is just about 20 miles. He's actually about less, probably around 10 miles from this field that I drove by because I used to live in Lafayette. And he said to me on an email, he said, we are definitely going to have tip back and we're definitely going to have a smaller ears this year. We are down in this part of the country. And that part of the country really does supply us with a large percentage of the state corn yield. This is another example in Indiana, not maybe a little farther away from Lafayette, farther north of town in Lafayette. And you see the whiteness of the tassels. You see that the silks really aren't browning up at all. As I said, 30% of the corn crop on my travels were like that. And the dramatic change from the way this crop looked on Thursday when I drove up to Detroit versus Sunday when I came back was really amazing because it had been 92 degrees all 3 days that I had not traveled. And it was 90 degrees until I got to Chillicothe, Missouri at 10 o'clock Sunday night. And I think this heat stress is really taking over and clipping our yields in the corn especially. So states that should be supporting the national corn yield, I think they're going backwards at this point. And that's why Des Moines, Iowa, Mankato, Minnesota, they're going to be big, big, big players. But I think we've kind of forgotten what's happening back east, as you kind of alluded to. And I thought the same thing until I took this trip.
Now, Mike, as well, one thought that I have just real quick. Obviously, the USDA report on Friday, they're going to be looking at conditions as of August 1st. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen a lot of deterioration since August 1st. I know it's August 10th, but I wonder how much that could factor into thinking is, you know, what will we see on the report in the last week or so? How big of a difference will that make maybe getting into the September report, Mike?
No, I think that's a really great point because remember last year in the August report, USDA took the corn yield from 179.5 down to 174.6 and really surprised the trade because that was a 2.7% cut. I was at 175 at that point. And so it wasn't a surprise to me, except that they did it so early. I thought they'd do it probably more in September. But that was when Iowa and Minnesota were suffering so much, Jesse. And I think that's the big question mark as you go into Friday's report. I'm with you 100%. I don't know what the USDA is going to say on Friday because of the crop progress report this week showing that they should drop it back some. But by the same token, they've dropped it once already this year. So why not wait a little bit could be the logic. And just for kicks, the August report, which usually never sees a bean yield reduction. They usually really wait until September, in my mindset anyway. We had a 1.6% drop in yield last year in the August report for the soybeans and went right down to 50 bushels. And so it's possible that they will cut yield, but I think you're right. It may be just a little bit too early. So the key, I think, to take away from the report before we jump to livestock is the idea the report may mean very little if we're still looking at hot and dry conditions in Des Moines, Iowa and Mankato, Minnesota for the next 7 to 10 days. Because I think we're really hurting this crop right now. And it's almost like it's a July report, not an August report when it comes to yield potential.
Well, and again, that is Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. He is our guest analyst here today. Coming up, we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to take a look at the livestock trade. We're going to discuss the CPI numbers out on Wednesday as well and their impact on the market trade. We'll discuss the energy market and more. That is all coming up here after the break as we continue with more market talk right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Thank you for joining us here today, making us part of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. He is our guest analyst here on the show today. We're going to get back to our conversation with Mike in just a minute. Want to take a look at Wednesday's closing numbers and get a recap of where things ended on the day session Wednesday. And again, the soy complex fading at the close, seeing some red numbers in beans. August front month beans down 4.5, 1688 and 3/4. September down 3.25, 1509. November beans one lower, 1427 and 3/4. Bean meal August up $2 a ton, 515.60. September up 50 cents a ton, 449.60. Bean oil August up 87 points, 7056. September was up 162 points on the session at 6738. Again, well off of our session highs on the day on Wednesday. Corn, September up 5.75, 6.21 1/4. December up 4.5, 6.18 1/2. March corn up 4.25, 6.25 3/4. In the wheat market, September Chicago up 18.25, 7.99 3/4. December up 17, 8.16 1/4. September Kansas City wheat up 21, 8.72 3/4. Spring wheat September up 13.5, 9.06 1/4. Live cattle August up 122, 139.20. October up 130, 144.47. December live cattle up 105, 150.70. Feeder cattle for August up 187, 180.67. September up 250, 185 even on Wednesday. August hogs were up 5, 122.25. October hogs up 125 at 185. And December hogs up 37 at 89.97 on the day Wednesday. Good strength in the stock market after the inflation numbers moderated and we saw the U.S. dollar fade as we went through the day on Wednesday as well. And decent strength in the energy markets also. All right, let's get back to our conversation. Again, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics. He is our guest analyst today on the show. Well, Mike, let's segue to livestock here and talk about that. A pretty solid day on the day Wednesday in cattle and hogs on the futures trade. I think cattle looked a little bit stronger than hogs. Let's start with the cattle side. Not a whole lot of cash activity yet this week, but as you look at this cattle market, what are your thoughts there right now?
The negotiated market is starting to pick up a little bit here at midweek, and that's usually indicative of a late cash trade, in my opinion. I think the live price is probably close to that 139, 140 level across the five area, or you know, Kansas, Nebraska, especially Kansas. I think the big thing with cattle right now, Jesse, other than the gap in the August contract that's at 140.27, and that's an area that I'll probably put some hedges in place if we can fill that, I think the biggest thing is we continue to see the female slaughter rates really high. And until we stop seeing that, we're not going to see the weights go down. The dressed weights are going to stay high because of those females. But once we do see that, I think we've ended our liquidation phase. And then we can start counting the days, I think, for when we're going to really tighten up on market-ready supplies. And so I could see this market being very sloppy, driven very hard by the grains, market ready cattle, ample supplies, calf guys have been calling me this week wondering, you know, do I retain? Do I put a lot more down? What's it going to be like in the feeder cattle market here with this liquidation because of the feed price and because of the hay price? And so I think it's a sloppy market for the rest of August, especially with us losing that summer grilling seasonal.
How about hogs? August contract getting ready to go off the board. I don't know if October, that contract can make up its mind. Does it want to go up to August? Does it want to hold pat around $100? That's kind of where we're at right now. As you look at the hog market, what's your take there?
We've gotten new news out of China in terms of CPI data, and their pork numbers looked better as far as CPI. So I'll be watching to see if our export sales on Thursday morning support us with big Chinese purchases. If that's the case, that helps the October market as the August goes off the board, I think. But if you ask me in a week from now, I think that I'll be saying that we've peaked in the belly seasonal, that the October hogs don't need to go up to where the August is, $20+ difference there, and that the October can get a little bit more premium to them. But I would not be surprised to see the August go off the board weaker and come closer with the cash index coming together with both of them kind of leaning lower at this point. So I think I'm seeing a high in the belly seasonal at this point. If that's the case, that's what really drove and put the afterburners on the August hog chart.
Well, you mentioned hogs and cattle, and we think about demand at the consumer level, and you mentioned the CPI. I got to give us time to talk about that today as well. Consumer price index coming out Wednesday showing a bit of a moderation in those inflation numbers. What are your thoughts after looking at the CPI, how that plays into all of our commodities as a whole, Mike?
Yeah, excellent question. I'm really glad you asked it because it's really super important, I think, to the funds and the investors. The inflation data did not show much of a jump in July until you drilled down. And when you look at food at home prices on the CPI number, Jesse, that was up over 13% versus July of 2021. So on an annualized basis, we are paying 13% more. We all know that's probably a lower number than what we're really paying at the grocery store. But it shows the funds and the investors that this inflation on the food side is not backing down. And I think that actually maybe will attract some money into the food commodities, the agriculture sector especially, as long as we keep pressure on the U.S. dollar. And I think that's where the CPI data, the big top line number, really helped us because it really took away the idea the Fed has to be as aggressive as what we were thinking. And that's why the stock market and the grains had such a good day, was they think, okay, the pressure's off now. The Fed's not going to keep tightening the screw on the money supply and push us into a recession, which essentially equates to deflation, not inflation. So I think it was about the best CPI report we could have gotten. And the dollar reaction was about the best dollar reaction we could have gotten. I want to see if we can't keep that weaker dollar trend going all the way through to Friday's close and keep the D's corn above 625, which was the old monthly high until today, and keep the Nove beans above 1481, which is its current monthly high. Those two numbers are real important to me once we close out this week.
And a weaker dollar, of course, I think could help the wheat market. We didn't touch a lot on wheat today, but a solid, solid day in all three complexes there. And I think a lot of that probably attributed to the weaker U.S. dollar.
Without a doubt. And I think the European market is still very much the point man when it comes to the wheat, because drought in Europe is getting worse and worse. I mean, it's record. Some parts of Spain are having a 1,000-year drought right now. And so if the Ukrainians don't ship out a lot, we could get a lot more business on a weaker dollar. Yeah.
Mike, I know I want to talk to energies a little bit, looking at propane, natural gas. We're still watching those markets. We're watching crude oil. One more chart on the video for us here. Walk us through what you're seeing. Talking propane.
Well, last week I made the text blast out to all the clients and subscribers to move on getting their fall needs locked in for every energy out there, mainly because of what's going on in Russia and what's going on with the natural gas spigot being tapped and turned off. That's happening now this week in Ukraine. I think the propane price going back down to $1.17 a gallon, getting back to last fall's lows, that's probably the best we can get at this point, given what's going on over in Europe. Even though stocks are increasing at this point in a pretty nice clip since March, April, I think that this is probably going to start to peak a little bit early as far as stocks. going up. I think we'll start to see the stocks being pulled down because we'll have a lot more demand on the export front. So I would take a look at that. This is one of those things where get in touch with me individually if you have questions, because I know that energy prices are a very regional issue and some may not be getting this kind of a price level.
Fantastic. Mike, before we run out of time, floor is yours. The open-ended question, as always, any other final thoughts you have for us today?
Well, the dollar's been doing us a good job on the analysis the last 6 or 7 months. I think it will continue to, because that's where the funds and the money is really at, trading $6.5-7 trillion a day in that commodity or in that complex in the currency. So go to globalcomresearch.com, pick up a free trial. I think it'll be worth your while, especially during this weather time period and this supply time period. I just finished up my corn national yield number. I'll be sending that to clients and subscribers tonight.
Mike, always a pleasure, sir. Great to catch up with you, and we will talk to you again next week. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Jesse. Great to be back with you, sir.
And again, that is Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, joining us today here on Market Talk. You can learn more and what he has to offer. Again, globalcomresearch.com. That is com with two M's, globalcomresearch.com. Again, thanks to Mike for joining us here today. Well, again, the market trades soybeans, soy complex fading well off session highs on the day. As we talked about with Mike, some issues with the Brazilian real, pointing to those as a reason why we moved lower. Corn held relatively firm, and the wheat market was strong on the day on Wednesday, while we saw good strength in cattle and hogs. So we'll be watching the trade closely as we get into Thursday's session and look ahead to Friday's USDA report. Well, coming up next, we're going to continue our crop tour of the country. We're going to talk with Derek Schuchter. He is a farmer in north central Iowa in Kossuth County. We're going to get his thoughts on how his crop is looking, how things are sitting around his farm. They were in line for some of those heavy rains we saw this past weekend. We're going to talk to Derek coming up next as we continue with more market talk. We'll be back on the way right after this.
Informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now here on Market Talk as we continue our crop tour across the Corn Belt, talking now with Derek Schuchter, Kossuth County, Iowa farmer, joining me on the program today. Derek, great to catch up with you, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jesse?
I am good. It is great to catch up with you and talk a little bit about how things are going in your neck of the woods. And I'm very interested to hear, since you're right in the, you know, kind of the heart of north central Iowa there along the Minnesota border. You guys got some rain here, it looked like, some pretty good rains this last weekend. So walk me through, how much did you guys get, and did it help out the crops on your farm there in Kossuth County, Derek?
Yeah, we were looking pretty dry here a couple weeks ago, and we got about 3 inches of rain here this last weekend, which was much needed. We had been pretty short, kind of getting supplemental rain all year, and the crop stress was starting to show it, and the dry areas were getting curled up and stunted, and it really perked everything up, and it's looking pretty good here. We'll need a little bit more by the end of the month, but we can't complain about this. This is just what the doctor ordered for us.
Well, and you think about it as well, and you mentioned getting a bit drier, and I know that we started to see that drought monitor kind of creep into parts of northwest Iowa and start to move over towards Kossuth County. Do you fear that some of that heat that you did see, did that take the top off the corn crop, do you think, any?
It probably took the best part off of it, but, you know, with the late planting we had and really how the year's gone, we still have a really good-looking crop, you know, all things accounted for. It seemed like south and maybe west of us in this part of the county, and definitely west, is drier. And this neck of the woods has been pretty fortunate all year with a few rains we've caught, and now a pretty good-sized one here this last weekend.
Well, I know you were telling me off the phone you've been out doing some spraying as well. Looking at disease pressure, insects, anything you're seeing in your crops here this year that's kind of affecting farmers there in north central Iowa?
We spent about 2 weeks spraying corn and beans for some bugs, aphids and beans, not a whole lot of aphid pressure. Seemed more spotty in areas. And spraying some corn rootworm beetles in the corn and then applying fungicide on all of that. So disease pressure-wise, that plants are looking pretty healthy. I'd say better than last year at this same time. And the bug pressure wasn't quite as bad, but it was more. It seemed to be more regional and spotty where we were doing more applications and trying to alleviate some of the bug pressures.
What about, you know, we've started to hear more reports of tar spot starting to make its way farther north and west. Have you seen any tar spot there in Kossuth County on your farm or heard of anyone who's maybe seen a little bit of tar spot start to creep in at all yet?
That seems to be a pretty hot topic, something we talked about all winter long in the chemical industry and application parts. The closest I've heard of has been over in Cerro Gordo County, so a couple counties over, but that's not saying it isn't here, but I physically have not seen it yet. But it might be here, it could be somewhere, but so far we've kind of been away from it, so far.
Well, that's definitely a good thing. We're going to keep our eyes on tar spot, of course. That's, like you said, a very hot topic. I should ask Derek, you know, with the crops looking good and everything, I know that farmers have been looking at commodity prices. They've been very strong here as of late, although, you know, we have come off the highs here in the last couple of months. I just wonder, as you are looking ahead to next year, to 2023, what's your biggest worry on the farm? Is it going to be commodity prices? Is it going to be your input costs, you know, seed, chemical, fertilizer, etc.? What are you worried about the most on your operation heading to next year?
For us, I think, well, the more recent future might be parts. We have really good service around here on all of our equipment, but it could be, you know, parts throughout fall as it drags on. Can you get what you need? Are you having to operate with something that's maybe, fully equipped? That'll be the near future. The long term might be the price of, you know, the inputs, the availability of inputs, where this is all going to go. It seems like there's availability, but there's talk that there isn't. So is that the case that there isn't availability? Are we going to struggle on that end? Or is it there and they're trying to, bait farmers into making early purchases? What direction is that going? What are we looking at? But you don't want to be caught in the long term of waiting too long and not having something. And that's what kind of drives price and creates problems for you know, the retailers too. So it's retailers and farmers are going to have to work together on all of this and to make it all work, kind of like we did this past year. But it all seemed to come together, at least in our neck of the woods here in Kossuth County.
Well, Derek, fantastic stuff. Sounds like timely rains up there, and I wish you a great rest of the growing season, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. But with that, I will let you go. I know you got a busy day in front of you. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you very much, Jesse.
And great stuff there. Derek Schutcher, Kossuth County, Iowa farmer. He farms north of Algona and right in the heart of corn country there in north central Iowa, getting some of those timely rains here this past weekend. Great to catch up with him and talk about how things are going there after the rains and how the crop is looking in his neck of the woods here as we work through this month of August. Well, a lot of stuff coming up on the show yet this week. Coming up here tomorrow, we're going to have a conversation with Brian Doherty of Total Farm Marketing, get his thoughts on the market action ahead of Friday's WASDE report. Also, we're going to have a conversation with Christine McCracken. She is with Rabobank. Going to talk about a new report on the pork industry that Rabobank just released. So we're going to get to her and talk about that on tomorrow's program as well. That's going to do it for Market Talk today. Have a fantastic rest of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.